I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, 2 hours a day, 9 to 11 o'clock. That is 9 to 11. Next hour, we will have with us here Andy Steele. Andy Steele is with, he's the operations manager for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So we're going to talk a little bit about, he's got a new book out. Architects and Engineers has got a new video out, a new documentary movie out about the collapse of the Twin Towers. And of course, and if you've never heard of this, definitely tune in next hour, World Trade Center 7, the third skyscraper that fell on 9/11 that most people don't even know about, was not hit by a plane, yet strangely collapsed into its own footprint at free fall speed at about 5:20 on 9/11 that afternoon. Architects and Engineer is a large group. I believe now they're over 3,000 certified architects and engineers who are calling for an independent investigation of what took place on 9/11. We're going to talk next hour about the science and what they're asking for and why they have a problem with this. I went back and watched some of their, you can go to ae911truth.org, and they've got some videos there that are, some of them are fairly short, some of them are longer, but they explain interviewing everybody from structural engineers, people who have designed high-rise buildings, metallurgists, and demolitions experts, and asked them to take a look at the evidence of the collapse of the towers on 9/11, and they all don't understand exactly what took place. Only three skyscrapers, only three steel-framed high-rise buildings have ever fallen due to fire, and they all happened on the same day, 9/11 of 2001. So this is, I think it's a fascinating topic, and we're going to kind of get in the first hour into, there's a weird thing that happens with people, and I don't quite understand it now. I should look back at my former self, because I was kind of one of these people who some things become so big and so really hard to conceive that you just absolutely, there's something about humans, we just resist them. We won't even really listen. We won't entertain. We won't look at evidence. We just pretend these things don't happen. We can't engage with people on them. We just dismiss them immediately. And I remember I was like that for a time, too. So I try to remember exactly what was through my mind. But when you start looking at, you know, what took place on 9/11, and this is not an isolated event. We can look at what took place during Pearl Harbor, weapons of mass destruction leading to the Iraq War. I mean, there's just all kinds of things that you can look at and realize that governments around the world, and ours in particular, will play fast and loose with the truth. Just exactly how deceptive can they be? And 9/11 is one of those things where when you kick open that door, you really realize there is just about no line that they will not cross if you believe that we've not been told the truth about 9/11. We're not going to discuss next hour exactly what happened on 9/11 because I don't think anybody really knows. Well, somebody knows. Nobody that I knows what took place, but it is just odd. It's kind of one of those things, and we're going to talk a little bit today about the vaccine program. You know, when you see that they are lying and covering up certain things, it certainly calls into, it's very hard to see blatant lies and mistruths. Is that a word? and then just start accepting everything else. Well, yeah, they did lie to us about that, but the rest of the stuff they said is fine. I mean, I'm somebody that trust is earned. It's not just handed over because somebody has a title or has achieved some level or gotten a certain number of votes. Once they are shown to be covering something up, to be lying about something, it makes you wonder what their motives are. Why would they lie about such a thing? 9/11 is one of those things, and we're going to talk about, you know, some of the vaccine stuff today as well. Just because the question is, why would they deceive us on these things? It just totally destroys credibility. So anyway, next hour, Andy Steele with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Should be a very interesting show. It's a fascinating topic for anybody who's interested in at least hearing what, and essentially these are scientists. These are people who, for a living, build structures and are responsible for the integrity of those. You should hear what their questions are about what took place on the 9/11. So next hour we'll do that. No Tech Tuesday today, but I didn't want to touch on something. I have gotten several of my friends that have sent me messages, you know, kind of in group text, and they say, "Oh, you got to update your iPhone. Got to make sure you update your iPhone." Now, my friends never do this, and I'm always maybe the last person in the world to ever update my phone. I don't care, and I keep hearing stories every time an update goes out of something going haywire with the phone, so I'm certainly not going to be an early adopter of any updates. I'll wait till they patch whatever mistake they made with the first update. But several people said, "Oh, this is a big security breach in your iPhones right now. You got to update it." Here was the story about it. Apple has released a security update to address vulnerabilities in Mac, Monterey, iOS, iPad, and Safari. An attacker could exploit one of these vulnerabilities to take control of an affected device. That's according to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. That's what they said on August 18th. Apple's explanation of the vulnerability means a hacker could get, quote, full administrative access, unquote, to the device that would allow intruders to impersonate the device's owner and subsequently run any software in their name. That was said by Rachel Toback, CEO of Social Proof Security. And I loved this one. I thought this was kind of interesting. Commercial spyware companies such as Israel's NSO Group are known for identifying and taking advantage of such flaws. There they are again. Our good friend, the Israeli government. Thank God we send them billions of dollars. Commercial spyware companies such as Israel's NSO Group are known for identifying and taking advantage of such flaws, exploiting them in malware that surreptitiously infects targets' smartphones, siphons their contents, and surveils the targets in real time. NSO Group, this Israeli group, has been blacklisted by the U.S. Commerce Department. Its spyware is known to have been used in Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and Latin America against journalists, dissidents, and human rights activists. The hits just keep on coming. Just always keep in mind what the two political parties tell you. We have no greater friend on the planet than the country of Israel. Their NSO group may be the ones targeting your phones, or they take advantage of such flaws. Anyway, it was just interesting to me. I don't know who's going to take over my phone, but the reason I even really mention it is because I had so many people kind of freaking out about this, making sure to tell all their friends, update their... I went to go update my iPhone last night. The thing takes 5 gigs to update. Do I not already have this operating software on my phone? I've got a 32-gig phone. I'm not a phone guy. I've got some apps. Most of them are blanked out. I've downloaded them to use them one time, and then I don't use them again, and occasionally I'll clean up my phone. I'm just not I kind of rebel against the phone. If you've listened to this show for any period of time, you know I'm a bit of an old man when it comes to this stuff. I'm just kind of sick of all the technology. Some of it's just fantastic. It's so handy, but I'm just not going to be the phone guy who knows. I've got pictures. I don't auto-delete old text conversations because I do find that I need things from old conversations, so I don't automatically. 5 gigs. I've got like 2 gigs on my phone. Why does this operating software take 5 gigs To update on a 32-gig phone. That's what, 1/6 of my entire phone has got to go to just one update? Am I missing something? You know, as I'm talking about this, I think, man, maybe I'm really showing my ignorance here. Maybe I'm just doing something completely wrong on my phone. Anyway, I guess this is a public service announcement. I guess this is a warning. I don't know, but I was just kind of, I guess I'm vulnerable. Maybe I shouldn't put that out there, but I don't put out my cell phone number. Someone may take it over. It seems like a good opportunity to maybe send texts out to your friends to say things that you've always wanted to say to them, but you would never actually say, and then just feign that somebody else took over your phone. Your husband's cheating on you. Oh, I don't know where that came from. My phone's been hacked. I haven't updated yet. Anyway, we'll come back and talk about some real stuff. Somebody is running for the exits. We got the news yesterday. The mini Mingla is trying to make his escape. He must be stopped. We'll talk about it when we come back. Stick around. Salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the wise side of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason. I glossed right over my quote of the day today. I forgot about it, but it's very germane to many topics on the show today, and it's from Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell said, "Emotions neither prove nor disprove facts. There was a time when any rational adult understood this, but years of dumbed-down education and emphasis on how people, quote, feel, have left too many people unable to see through this media gimmick." And it is interesting, and this applies to people on either side of the vaccine issue, whether it comes to people on either side of political issues, whether it comes to people on either side of 9/11 issues. There's such an emotional component. Now, I'm an emotional guy. You can hear me get pretty fired up about several different topics that I talk about on this show. But it is this inability to see facts, because we're already emotionally dug in on one side of the issue. It's interesting to observe, and we're all subject to it. I'm sure I am too. Maybe there is a great argument that freedom is a bad thing, and I'm just not open to it. I haven't heard it. Nobody's ever approached me with that. Seems pretty universal that people think that people should be free to live their lives. But maybe there's an argument out there that I'm just completely ignoring because I'm just so emotionally tied to the idea of actual freedom and liberty. But when it comes to emotional stuff, we will shut. This is a big thing in the drug war. It's interesting. I had a conversation with somebody last night. My favorite kind of conversation. Not because anybody said I was right about anything, but I talked to somebody who listened. We got talking about drugs somehow, and I started talking about, you know, the damages the drug war has done, and you know, the unintended consequences that fentanyl wouldn't really even be a thing except for the drug war. Because the iron rule of prohibition is when something is outlawed, they try to make it more and more concentrated to be able to fit it in smaller packets to smuggle. If there were corporations out there offering cocaine, offering marijuana, even offering heroin, they wouldn't be poisoning and killing their customers with fentanyl. Fentanyl is what it is because it is so tiny and so incredibly powerful that they can get tremendous yield off of it to boost the potency of, and it's killing people in the streets. And we focus entirely on this deadly fentanyl, and we actually exacerbate the war on drugs, not understanding that fentanyl is actually a result of the war on drugs. But the person I was talking to said, "That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way before. That's all I ever ask for." She doesn't have to agree with me. In the end, we could continue to debate it, and she might have a different point of view. I'm not mad at her for disagreement. Anybody who will say, "That's interesting, I had never thought about that before." Well, that's somebody I can have a conversation with and leave, even if we totally disagree, and I'll have a great deal of respect for him. Somebody who will actually listen. Emotions block us off from some pretty glaringly obvious facts, and we're going to get into some of those in the first and second hour. So yesterday we learned that the mini Mingla himself, Anthony Fauci, is retiring. He's leaving the game. This feels a bit well-timed, doesn't it? We also had our own Thomas Dobbs. He's parachuted out of his position. Is he gone yet? I'm not really sure. But he's headed. He's staying local here, so we still know where he is. I believe he's at UMMC now. But he's leaving his position as state health director. And Anthony Fauci is finally, after 87 years in government, the highest paid government employee we have. Think about that next time you look at your federal withholding. He's decided to step down. He said his career's not over. He's still got a passion for hurting people. So he's going to stick around, but he is out. My first thought was, seize his passport immediately. And then my second thought was, this feels like one of these guys who might run to Israel, because Israel won't extradite him. And then I thought again for a nanosecond and said, now that might not be a safe place for him either, because they have really injected the Israelis with these shots. I mean, they went to town in Israel on those people over there. They are heavily vaxxed and suffering the consequences of it. Which made me think about something else. This is the inside the mind of Mike Madison. You know, I was thinking if these heavily vaccinated Israelis might not take kindly to the many mingle in their midst as the truth continues to come out about this shot program. And it got me thinking about the original Mengele. So I looked him up. I don't know if people even understand when I call Dr. Fauci the mini Mengele. Here's who I'm referring to, Joseph Mengele. He was known as the agent of death. The guy lived to, he was born in March of 1911. He died in 1979. Where did this guy bug out to? I didn't read the rest of the story. Was he one of the Argentina refugees? But Joseph Mengele was also known as the Angel of Death. He was a German SS officer and physician during World War II. He's mainly remembered for his actions at the Auschwitz II Birkenau concentration camp, where he performed deadly experiments on prisoners as a member of the team of doctors who selected victims to be killed in the gas chambers, and as one of the doctors who administered the gas. So that's why I refer to Dr. Fauci as the mini Mengele, his diminutive physical status, but equal size of evil as the original Joseph Mengele. But then I, further inside the mind of Mike Madison, I went a little further down in the story just, and I thought I'd include this too, because I think this is something else that Americans are not really familiar with. When they're talking about Mengele being dispatched as the Nazi regime fell, with Red Army troops sweeping through German-occupied Poland, Mengele was transferred 280 kilometers, from Auschwitz to the Gross-Rosen concentration camp in January of 1945, 10 days before the arrival of the Soviet forces at Auschwitz. I just mentioned that because the Russian contribution to defeating the Nazis is pretty much whitewashed within American history. The Russians, I believe, lost somewhere north of 20 million people fighting the Nazis, and it's pretty well accepted around the entire world, except in the United States, where we love to say foam finger number one here, that we defeated the Nazis. And certainly the involvement of the United States in Western Europe was important to the effort, but it was the Soviet Union, the Russians that we are currently right now trying to destroy, that have a tremendous hand and are probably most responsible for actually taking down Adolf Hitler as he decided to lash out towards the Soviet Union. Just another historical fact. Maybe the Russian people themselves are not the great Satans that your media propagandists are trying to convince you of. They were very important in World War II. So anyway, the mini Mengele is leaving office at the National Institutes of Health, taking along with him, what I can only imagine is one big, fat, juicy taxpayer retirement program. Oh, I can't even imagine what we're gonna be paying this guy on a yearly basis. He's been in government for something like 42 years or something like that. And he's the highest paid federal employee. Oh, he is going to enjoy a luxurious retirement on the taxpayer. Of course, that will be nothing compared to the money shoveled at him by the pharmaceutical companies that he has been a chief spokesperson and salesperson for. But do you remember this? It was interesting. I've been covering over the past couple of weeks. I think I've missed them. They've been coming so fast. The long list of people who have been quadruple vaxxed who have been coming down with COVID. And one of those people was Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer. The CEO of Pfizer has gotten quadruple vaxxed and has recently gotten COVID. And I just wanted to remind everybody that he said this in April of 2021. Quote, this is Albert Bourla, the quadruple vaccinated CEO of Pfizer, said, quote, excited to share the updated analysis from our phase 3 study with BioNTech also showed that our COVID-19 vaccine was 100% effective in preventing COVID cases in South Africa. 100% exclamation point. This is what the CEO of Pfizer said in April of 2021, as he told you, I'm not talking about hospitalizations of death. They're still trying to cling to that. We're going to bust that open on the other side of this next break. But this is the CEO of Pfizer who told you 100% effective in preventing COVID-19 cases. Quadruple vaxxed has just gotten COVID, as has Anthony Fauci, as has Joe Biden. They have all gotten it multiple times. When we come back, some good clips showing you what the wreckage that the mini Mengele will leave behind. I'm telling you, take this man's passport. He may find himself in Argentina if we do not corral him here. We'll get to the rest of this when we come back. Stick around. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. So people are ruled by emotions. They just get so entrenched. It's interesting. People will put on really big topics, Trump, the vaccines, 9/11, that they will invest their entire ego in a position, and it makes it almost impossible to move them. You know, the more certain you are about something, the more a hit it is to your ego if you find out that you're wrong. And so people just not even entertain the idea. If somebody went out and took these jabs, and they posted about it on social media, some people were reluctant to take it, but their doctor that they respect told them to take it, so they took it. They cannot for a moment go back and say that their doctor was wrong. They've just invested themselves in, no, everything's fine. I'm fine, so this thing is fine. You're being ridiculous. I mean, and it's the same. We'll talk next hour. We're going to have Andy Steele on with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. People are just so guided by their emotions, they just refuse to look at facts. I am constantly searching for areas of my own life where I do that. I'm an emotional guy about topics. I get fired up. You know, I talk about the war on drugs through what I believe is an incredibly logical thing, and it's not much harder to do than to go back to prohibition of the 1920s with alcohol and see all of the horrors that it spawned, and we reversed course. Alcohol still damages people in our society right now. But prohibition was worse. You know, I spent 18 years with my children explaining to them the dangers of drugs. I'm not promoting drugs to anybody. I'm just saying, logically, the drug war has actually made things worse. And I'm not about to get into that topic, but the thing is that people emotionally, I mean, one of my favorite people in the world, I just love this girl, and I've had this conversation with her before, and she goes, yeah, I know what your arguments are, and they make some sense, but I'm just not changing my mind. You know, at least she's honest about it. I'm just not open to anything because I've just decided that's a non-starter. So people get emotionally into these things. As Thomas Sowell said, emotions neither prove nor disprove facts. When it comes to the mini Mengele stepping down, what has he left behind? Tucker Carlson. I got to tell you, I mean, Tucker is covering some stuff that other people just will not touch. It's interesting to see. I mean, it's another one of these things I'd like to know what goes on behind the scenes. Are his ratings just so good that the Fox brass? Because across Fox News, across Fox, Fox and Friends, the room temperature IQ show that is on Fox in the morning. No offense if you watch it. I know everything else is abhorrent to try to watch, but there's no Mensa meeting going on in the mornings on Fox and Friends. But they are all have been fine with this shot program. Now, they'll give you that we don't think you should be forced. We're against the mandates. But they're absolutely fine with the experimenting on our toddlers and encouraging people to go out and get this if you want it. Tucker Carlson somehow stands above the fray. This is a clip where Tucker Carlson starts to talk about some studies that are being done now, what, a year and a half into Minnie Mengele's grand experiment on the human race. And Tucker touched this stuff.
The link to neurodegenerative disease, myocarditis, Bell's palsy, liver disease, impaired adaptive immunity, impaired DNA damage response.
And tumor, for some reason, he doesn't finish out this quote, and tumorigenesis, that'll be important in just a second, meaning starts cancerous tumors. He's reading from, this clip kind of starts in the middle of something, he's reading from the Journal of Food and Chemical Toxicology. The Journal of Food and Chemical Toxicology. I'm going to let him start again where they are explaining. They say, they start this quote with, again, this is the Journal of Food and Chemical Toxicology. So we identify potential profound disturbances in regulatory control of protein synthesis and cancer surveillance. And then Tucker continues with the statement.
The link to neurodegenerative disease, myocarditis, Bell's palsy, liver disease, impaired adaptive immunity, impaired DNA damage response, etc. So it's possible, in fact, it's looking likely, that the vaccine might suppress the immune system.
Exactly what some of these doctors were concerned about before this thing even launched. I mean, exactly. That's exactly what they said their concern was.
This fact, the authors concluded, will, quote, have a wide range of consequences, not the least of which include the reactivation of latent viral infections and the reduced ability to effectively combat future infections, end quote. Now, again, we sincerely hope that's not true. But it's not just the conclusion of one scientific journal. The Lancet, maybe the most famous scientific journal in the world, released similar findings in February. The Lancet's piece was entitled, quote, "Risk of Infection, Hospitalization, and Death Up to 9 Months After a Second Dose of COVID-19 Vaccine." A physician called Kenji Yamamoto made this observation about the data from The Lancet. He wrote this in a letter to the Journal of Virology, and we're quoting, "The study showed that immune function among vaccinated individuals 8 months after the administration of 2 doses of COVID-19 vaccine was lower than that among the unvaccinated individuals." Now, your first response, if you're a humane person, to a line like that has got to be deep sympathy. Because people were misled. They were forced. They were forced. Medical ethics thrown out the window. People were forced to take medicine they didn't want. And some of them may have been hurt by it. And you don't have to take this man's word for it. Pull up the Lancet study yourself. You won't find anything of the text of the article saying what Kenji Yamamoto said, which is weird. Why would the Lancet want to hide a major finding like that? We can't say. But if you look at table 3 in the piece, here's what you'll find buried in the data. Among people around the age of 80 who have been double vaccinated, that would include people like Joe Biden, the per capita rate of medical incidences, including hospitalizations or death, is nearly twice as high as the rate of serious incidents for the unvaccinated. This is 180 days after vaccination. What is that? And why is no one interested?
All certainly interesting questions. And I would say, you know, so what they're saying is your immune system appears to be compromised. You're not as able to fight off. And your immune system is constantly fighting things off. 8 months after injection, your immune system is actually weaker than it was before the shots. So the logic has been now, what we're finding out is that in the 8 months is odd. It seems to me that the vaccine efficacy, I guess maybe that was just their study parameters, the efficacy of this vaccine is only a few months. So you would take a shot that might give you a few months of some level, doesn't appear to be much, but some level of protection against a disease that's 99.9% survivable for everybody under the age of 70. You would take this shot for a few months to protect you against a disease that, if you're young and healthy, was not any danger to you in the first place, but you risk impairing your immune system going forward against all other diseases. Interesting. This is Dr. Peter, I think it's Peter Corey, Dr. Corey. And I want to thank Chris for sending me this clip. I actually played some of this the other day, but it's worth revisiting. Where he is, he's a pathologist, and he's explaining what he's seen and what he's talking to doctors in his experience as he travels the world talking about these issues as a pathologist and what he's seeing in people that he autopsies. And he's talking to doctors around the world. This is what he's finding.
Cells don't lie. The blood patterns don't lie. The dead people don't lie. And the deposition of the spike protein in tissues doesn't lie. So you can attack me. You don't have to like me. I've lost some of my largest clients because they're like, oh, you're too controversial. I'm like, controversial? I'm a pathologist. I don't create a disease. I don't prevent a disease. I am the reporter at the scene of the accident. I report the disease. I am observing patterns. We have definitely seen an uptick of many patterns that are unusual. Pathologists are the quality control of medicine. Attack me all you want. But that's your own insecurity and the fact that you can't come forth with data to counter what I am saying. And I'm not the only one seeing this. Oncologists everywhere I travel now in the country and the world, been in France, been in England recently, pathologists, other physicians, oncologists, radiation oncologists, radiologists, they're seeing it. I was on a big Zoom call with a large group in New York yesterday. So one gal was talking to the gal doing her mammogram, and she said, are you seeing an uptick in breast cancers? And she said, are you kidding me? We're seeing tons of 20 and 30 year olds coming in with breast cancer, and about 99% of people in their population are jabbed. And so a radiologist here just across the state calls me and says, I just saw two high grade breast cancers in two 31 year old women 4 weeks after their booster. And chair of oncology at a large hospital in Florida just a month ago said, hey, doc, thanks for speaking out. I usually see an aggressive brain cancer in a young patient about every decade or so. I've seen five in the last month after the boosters. And so left and right, wherever I go, the medical community is starting to speak up and confirm what I'm seeing. In England, a week and a half ago, same thing. Doc came up to me, a doctor from Ireland, doctor from England, a nurse who's been in medicine for 30 years. They're like, hey, we're seeing it, and it's in young patients, and it's aggressive, and we have patients that have been cancer-free for 3, 4, 5 years. All their scans are clear, they get that booster, and now they have stage 4 disease again. It is happening. I don't want it to be happening.
And that's why I made sure that I included in that quote that Tucker left off, the tumor genesis. Those things line up. The studies that Tucker Carlson was reading from and what this doctor is seeing, this Dr. Corey is seeing as a pathologist and the doctors he's talking to, that your immune system is failing. And these cancers are coming back. I spoke to the wife of a surgeon not long ago, and she asked, you know, are they seeing anything in their practice? They said they're seeing a ton of strokes. This is somebody who deals with people who have had strokes. So they're seeing a ton of them. If only there had been a radio station. If only there had been a media outlet in central Mississippi. A radio station full of local hosts that had tried to warn people that this might be the case. WGOP radio stations didn't urge caution. The Mississippi Republican Party didn't advise caution or careful consideration and weighing the cost-benefit analysis. Matter of fact, to the very top of the Republican Party, they've been telling you to run out and go get these jabs. You know, voluntarily, of course, but they've been telling you to go get these things. If only there had been one radio station, one media outlet in central Mississippi that had been warning about these things. Oh, that's right. All right, so next hour we're going to be talking to Andy Steele with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. If you've not explored this topic before, I think you'll find this very interesting. They have a great organization of people who build skyscrapers, structural engineers, who say the way the buildings collapsed on 9/11 was not explained, ever. And we have to wonder why. The subtle thread running through this first hour, and it will go into the next hour, is this kind of a It's a mental wall that people put up. Now, I would like to wonder myself. I came out very suspicious of these shots when they came out because I realized there was no long-term safety testing done. That was my biggest concern. Now, there's people out there saying, if you took the shot, you're going to be dead in 3 years. And they were saying, that's definitely going to happen. And I said, no, there's no way to know that. Nobody's had this thing in their body for 3 years. I'm not jumping on that train to say, oh, you're all going to die. That's ridiculous. We have to wait and see. And if the shots had stopped COVID in its tracks, and in 7 years, everybody who had the shot was just doing wonderfully, then I hope I would have had the ability to say, well, my concerns were unfounded. Thank God. I was concerned, but there was no justification for it. They knocked this one out of the park. I'd like to think I had the ability to do that, but very few people really do. If we really get into a, we invest our ego and our reputation in one particular position, it doesn't matter the facts you throw at somebody. They just resist it. And we all know people like this, and I just thought this was interesting. This was Steve Kirsch. He's an engineer. I believe he's an engineer, and he's gotten into really parsing through the data around the shots. And he's started, he's on Substack here, but I wanted to recount a story that he had. And we all know people like this, but it's an interesting human phenomenon. I'm going to read you his piece here. He said, I recently talked to a friend of mine at a recent social event. We'll call him Bob. He's super smart about most things, but when it comes to the vaccine, he's blind to the truth. He was bragging about how he's been vaxxed 6 times with the COVID vaccine. He's perfectly healthy. He can't wait for SB 866 in California to pass, so when his kids turn 12, they can decide to go get the vaccine over their mother's objections. This is Steve Kirsch reporting this. He says, Bob thinks I'm a nutcase cherry-picking data. He says he used to be respected, but after turning anti-vax, people have lost all respect for me. He says, I have a religious belief about the vaccine, and I'm not driven by data. What he isn't telling anyone that he's been losing his vision ever since he got his first COVID vaccine. He used to have 20/20 vision, but now he wears glasses and can't drive at night. When I brought up the data showing the connection between the shots and vision loss, he changed the topic. I run into this a lot. I showed him 2 papers showing the more you vaccinate, the sicker you get. He's got a hyperlink to the papers here. He asked, where are the papers that show the opposite? He ignored my request. He gets his belief system from the mainstream media, full stop. He reasons that if I was correct, surely Bill Gates would agree with me and admit they goofed. It's 100% deference to authority. Bob will not look at the data himself, and he doesn't want to discuss it. He will not engage. He thinks that if I was right, there would be more than a handful of people speaking out, so he tallies the size of the support base on each side of an issue instead of looking at the data. And this is exactly what we run into. This is a human phenomenon. Bob's not an evil dude. People who are not willing to look at 9/11 stuff are not evil people. It is just this wall we put up. Sometimes things are just... And I kind of get this, too. Sometimes things are too big to contemplate. The implications of actually going down what people will call a rabbit hole, and it does feel that way, doesn't it? They're pretty profound. I'll tell you right now, investigating 9/11 myself, looking into these things, looking at the work of architects and engineers for 9/11 was very uncomfortable. Extremely uncomfortable. And for years, I brushed away anybody who dared to mention anything like that. I thought they were nuts because the implication was so large, and I didn't think that there could possibly be anything to it. WTC 7, World Trade Center 7, changed that when I saw footage of that and went, huh, that's weird. That's really about all it took. And I started looking more into that and came to realize that there's some really funky stuff going on here that does not make any sense. But very few people are open to that. I could have just stayed in my lane because more people were with me when I wouldn't look at 9/11 stuff. I didn't risk being thought of as being crazy when I wouldn't look at it. When I do look at it, and you can listen next hour to our discussion with somebody from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, we'll go through what they see that they are having questions about, and you can decide if it's crazy talk or if these people are somehow rooted in some level of experience in structural or engineering. And should these people be listened to? It's kind of like Dr. Malone, Dr. Corey, Dr. McCullough. These people who have there's virologists around the world that have been talking about these vaccination programs. Should we listen to them, or do we listen to us who we've made up our mind? I don't go to my mechanic and argue with my mechanic because I don't know anything about cars. So some of these experts should at least have some credibility to be listened to, and then you draw your own conclusions. But there's just this wall. I know people like this. We all do. Or if I bring up these topics, and I'll be honest with you, the same thing happens when I discuss Donald Trump and the problems I have with it. Nobody wants to talk about it. They will change the subject. Now, I'm going to do a whole show on that at some point. I'll give people a chance to call. I've offered a listener a seat across the table from me as we debate the Donald Trump stuff. But, you know, people invest their entire personalities and their ego into something. It is hard to move them. I don't hate them. I'm not mad at anybody. I almost just observe it. I've always said I thought I should have been a psychologist. I'm interested in the human mind and what makes people resist truth when it stares them straight in the face. We'll be back with Andy Steele. Stay with us. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I appreciate you joining me today. We're going to get into something a little early. Every year on September 11th, I do a show. I do a tax show on April 15th. I do a 9/11 show on 9/11 every year as we celebrate, or not celebrate, observe, I guess is a better way to put it, observe the anniversary of the September 2001 9/11 attacks. We're a little early to that topic this year, but I think it's important. Anytime I can get somebody on that's involved in fighting to try to get to the truth or an actual independent investigation into what took place on 9/11, one of the most important events in American history. I don't think anybody would argue that. And I think a lot of people, as our mainstream media is known to be, not real in depth on a lot of different topics. And there are a lot of people out there that are questioning, this includes 9/11 families, that are questioning exactly what took place on 9/11, because what what is referred to as the official story does not make sense. Now, there's a whole lot of different aspects to what took place on 9/11 that don't make sense. We're going to focus in today with Andy Steele. He is with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. We're going to focus in on what they focus in on, because their qualification is in structural integrity of high-rise buildings, in architecture, and these kinds of things. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about the questions surrounding the collapse of the buildings when it comes to 9/11. So I've got with us today Andy Steele. He is the Operations Manager for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Andy, thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having us and covering this very important topic.
It really is incredibly important, and I think it is, you know, as time passes, it becomes further off the radar screen to so many people, but I'll tell you, it's not any less important than it was back then to get to the truth of exactly what took place.
Oh, exactly. I mean, here we are 21 years later, and we still have not gotten the complete story of what really happened on that important day. And there's so many family members who have never had their questions answered. I mean, even the 9/11 Commission report, which was not really tasked with getting into the nitty-gritty of the engineering aspects of why these three buildings came down on September 11th, but just, was tasked with giving some kind of accounting, some kind of justification or justice to the American public and some accountability. They didn't even want to exist. The president didn't even want to form this thing until a group of New Jersey widows they lost their husbands in the attacks, got together and rallied and sort of forced them to do this. And then, of course, the National Institute of Standards and Technology was the ones tasked with giving us some kind of comprehensive report on why these three buildings, and your audience may not be as familiar with it as we are. There were actually three buildings that fell
right
on September 11th. We'll get into, but NIST was tasked with getting into why these three buildings came down. And, you know, they produced these reports. They had a lot of verbiage and jargon in them, but no substance. When engineers, architects, other people in the building trades industry actually delved into these reports, They found a whole lot of nothing, no real substance, as we'll get into on this show. And with our own analysis of the videos, everything that is publicly available of showing these three towers coming down, all of the data, our conclusions are very much different than NIST and the government's. We come to the conclusion that pre-placed explosives brought these three towers down. That's what the overwhelming evidence shows. This is a national scandal that the corporate media and our government has been trying to keep from the public eye as much as they can. We do our job trying to educate people, rally for a new investigation. That's why shows like this are so important and why your audience needs to look at our evidence, listen to this show, go to ae911truth.org and see the materials that we got available there, and write to your congressman or congresswoman and let them know that this is not going to stand. We need a new investigation, even if it is 21 years after the fact.
Yeah, it's so strange. You know, I think there's still so many questions about the assassination of Kennedy. And it's, you know, I mean, we've gone a long time and we know that they've still got, I think, 17,000 documents are still classified in the Kennedy assassination. I mean, these things are still very important. And the fact that so many things are not covered or not addressed does not make them less important. It almost makes them, you know, more suspicious as to why they just don't come out and do these things. And as you said, they resisted even a 9/11 commission. Which is odd in itself with an event that was as important as the 9/11 attacks were. Tell us, let's start out right now, just tell us a little bit. You are with a group called Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Tell us about your organization and who it's comprised of.
Right. Well, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization representing currently over 3,500 architects and engineers and other people in the building trades industry and also in the science fields who have the authority to speak on this matter and have studied and analyzed everything that is available about why these three towers came down and have come to the conclusions I spoke of earlier, that there were pre-placed explosives in these buildings. We also represent 9/11 family members, and our main mission is to educate the public, get as much information out there as possible about this topic, and rally our Congress to actually investigate this. You know, we always say a new investigation. It's sort of a small acknowledgement that there was something that was claimed to be an investigation, but they never really did any kind of significant investigation of this. When you dive into the NIST reports, and you'll see, we really didn't get anything for all the tax money that was spent on giving us these reports. So that is what we do. We've existed for a very long time, since 2007, and we've done a lot of work. You know, keep in mind, this is a very difficult mission to take on because there's so much resistance to what we do, but we've managed to get this issue in the minds of most people. Most people have heard of it by this point, and we're still going strong, and you know, we're making a lot of inroads. We just had a study from the University of Alaska Fairbanks published, which I'll get into, which completely throws the NIST reports out the window, just completely disproves them. And that has been very important. And we do a lot of outreach to the media, outreach to members of Congress and such, and just to the general public with our materials and, you know, with all of our information.
Yeah. And I tell you, you've got a great website. And I encourage anybody, when we get done here, anytime if you feel compelled to, you know, even disprove this or find some crackpots or something, go to Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. It's ae911truth.org. Isn't that correct, Andy?
That is correct.
Yeah. If you go to that website, you'll see interviews with many of the members, the people that have signed, asking for a new investigation. These are metallurgists. These are chemical engineers. These are structural engineers. These are people who have developed and made their, you know, decades of experience building high-rise buildings. These are not people, and I want to, you know, I want to explain, too. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth has a very laser focused mission, as far as I'm concerned. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but they're not about telling you what exactly happened, who was responsible, who was behind it. There's a whole lot of speculation out there. Nobody really knows for sure, no matter how strident they are in telling you exactly who was responsible for everything on 9/11. They look strictly at the structural integrity of the buildings and the way that they fell that day, and that's what we're going to get into today. We're not talking about any politicians, any governments, anything around the world. These are not conspiracy theories. This is looking particularly at the collapse of the buildings and the fact that these studies that the government provided reasons for these falls was just not accurate and was not a complete study. So that is their focus, and that's what we will get into today. There's just great interviews on your website with these people, these scientists, and they explain it very matter-of-factly. These are people, you know, I guess you call them scientists. They're architects, but it's a science to build these buildings and understand loads and I don't even know the terms to use, but these are professionals in the field just saying this doesn't make sense. So I encourage anybody, if you want to explore this further, to go into AE911truth.org and check out some of the interviews and the videos they've put out. All right, so Andy, when we come back, we'll take a quick break right now. When we come back, let's start looking at, in particular, I guess we'll kind of start where I started. It's interesting that y'all formed in 2007, and I'll tell a story real quick. In 2007, I was involved in the Ron Paul campaign for president of the United States. I was helping him in the state of Mississippi. I was like deputy director of the Ron Paul campaign. And we would go to meetings and I'd meet a lot of Ron Paul supporters. And there were people there that would bring up the 9/11 thing. And this was before I had ever looked at it and just really dismissed it. And I would tell these people, I said, don't lead with 9/11. And when they left, I would just talk to the other people in the campaign and would say, oh my gosh, these people in this 9/11 thing. So I was very resistant to the story itself until about 2007, 2008, when I saw a video of World Trade Center 7. This is WTC 7 and its fall on that day. And I just remember looking at it and going, that's weird. And it just did not take long. There's so many people who do not know that a third skyscraper fell on that day, I think around 5:20 that night, that was not hit by a plane, that had some office fires, but collapsed at free fall speed into its own footprint. So when we come back, Andy, let's start with World Trade Center 7, because this is the one thing that I think people will find the most interesting in it all and something that most people don't know about it. So we're talking to Andy Steele. He is the operations manager for architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth here on the Mike Madison Show. We will be right back. I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I? All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking to Andy Steele. He is the operations manager for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And we started talking before the last break about World Trade Center 7. Andy, can you explain to us this story that a lot of people don't know about the third skyscraper that fell on 9/11?
Right, and a lot of people don't know that. They're so familiar with the Twin Towers. We all watched the Twin Towers come down, but only a small fraction of the population saw World Trade Center 7 come down, and this was 5:20 in the evening of September 11th. This was a 47-story steel frame high-rise. It would have been the biggest building had it been in any of the 33 of our states. Of course, it was dwarfed by the Twin Towers, which were so much more significantly larger than it, but it was a really big building, steel frame high rise, and it caught on fire when the fall of the North Tower happened. It sustained some minor damage to the corner of the building. People think because of this damage, this building came down. But even though NIST admits that this damage was not significant enough to bring the building down, you can look that up in their FAQs on their World Trade Center 7 report. FAQ number 21 addresses this. And in fact, they say that the collapse initiated on the opposite corner. But I want your audience, because we don't have the benefit of visual aids right now, later on, when you're at home, go on YouTube and look up World Trade Center 7. Get a video with no commentary from either side of this debate. Just watch it for yourself. The building comes straight down in a symmetrical fashion. The roof line stays pretty much level as it comes down. And when you look at it, most people will say, and if you show it to them, don't tell them it has anything to do with 9/11. They will say it looks like pre-placed explosives brought this building down. It looks like a controlled demolition. So just intuitively, most people will say that there had to have been some kind of man-made cause for this building's collapse. So now let's get into it. The National Institute of Standards and Technology asserts that this was not a controlled demolition. They say that this was a progressive collapse caused by random office fires, again, on the opposite corner of the building, and this is their explanation. We'll pick it apart in just a moment. But according to them, that some fires got really hot in the corner of the building on a particular floor, and because these fires got so hot, they caused these beams above them that were framing into a particular girder to expand, push the girder off of its seat. The girder crashed to the floor below, and then this caused a whole chain reaction of floors collapsing on themselves on the interior, while the exterior, of course, is remaining unaffected. And according to Nest, this all happened inside the building. The interior fell first and then the exterior, and that's why it looks like a controlled demolition. This is the essence of their entire argument. Random office fires. Now, most of us have seen some form of steel frame high-rise catch on fire, either in person or on television. And when a steel frame high-rise catches on fire, it burns like a torch in the night. Pieces of it may fall away here and there, but in the end, you still have a steel frame skeleton standing there. A lot of times, they're able to renovate the building afterwards and use it again, rent out the office space to new clients, and everything is okay. So this was the first time in history a steel frame high-rise had collapsed only because of fires. Now, with this explanation, there's some problems right away. One of the first problems that I always cite is that we have photographs of the area of collapse initiation. This is where they say the collapse started. And their whole explanation, of course, the thermal expansion of beams requires raging fires to be happening. You know, you can't have beams getting hot and expanding if you don't have raging fires. But these photographs that I'm looking at right now show that the fires were out on those floors, the 12th and 13th floors, where the collapse, they say, began. So immediately, right there, we could just end the entire case because there is no fire to generate this heat. This should throw out the entire thing. Of course, they don't. They stand by their story, so we have to dive in further. But you can't have thermal expansion of beams without raging fires. Another issue, and this gets a little bit technical, I'll try to boil it down as best as I can, but we had a team of researchers that was affiliated with our group that discovered a whole lot of problems with NIST's report regarding World Trade Center 7. The essence of it is that they left out parts of the building to try to make their collapse analysis more feasible. They left out the shear studs, which were in place there, the Stepner plates. They got measurements wrong. When you correct these errors in NIST report, when you include these missing structural features, it renders what NIST said happened completely impossible. Now, of course, we have approached NIST, asked them to rerun the analysis with the proper structural features included, and they have refused to do that, of course, because I speculate it would completely negate what they said happened. So basically, they dry-labbed their entire investigation. They did everything they could to make their explanation more plausible.
Right.
Now, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, no. And so what NIST also offers us, they rely a lot on computer model science. You know, they create an animation to try to support their theories. And, you know, some of the animations look very pretty and stuff, and you can do a lot with computers these days, and there's nothing wrong with using computer animations. We've done that in our own study. But when you do a computer animation to try to investigate the cause of a building's collapse, you have to simulate what happens in real life. So when you do a side-by-side comparison of NIST's computer model of World Trade Center 7 coming down and compare it to what actually happened, it looks nothing like what actually happened. In NIST computer model, the World Trade Center 7 begins to come down, and then it starts to turn on itself. It starts to crinkle like one of those novelty soda cans that you see out in Spencer's, if that store still exists, right? So what happens as it starts to turn? They stop the animation. They only go up to the point of collapse initiation, and then they tell you that all the rest is just, you know, you can just expect the rest to happen, even though it begins to betray what we actually saw. So their computer models don't actually match what happened in real life. Again, Building 7 comes down straight and symmetric, roof line staying intact and level. Their animations begin to turn on themselves. Now, when interested parties, including AE 911 Truth, have asked for the input data on their computer models, NIST says that they cannot release that. The reason they give is because it would jeopardize public safety if they did. Now, let that sink in to your audience right there, that releasing the input data on a model for a building that no longer exists would somehow jeopardize public safety. This doesn't make sense on its face. I believe that they don't want us to find the errors in their model because they could not replicate what actually happened with the explanation they were trying to give to the American public. Now, you know who could replicate it was the University of Alaska Fairbanks. AE 911 Truth funded a study at that university headed up by Dr. Leroy Halsey, a prominent engineer there, a professor. And he tried to recreate what happened in real life using NIST conclusions and could not do that, of course. However, he was able to recreate what we saw in real life. And the way he did this was by taking out the interior columns and then taking out the exterior columns a few seconds afterwards. And, of course, the model came straight down symmetric, just like we saw at 5:20 in the evening on September 11th.
And there were
now, taking out the.
Am I correct? There were 89. That's from memory. The 89 interior pillars or whatever the structures in there, and they were claiming that the failure of one caused the entire collapse.
Yeah, well, they claim that these beams pushing a particular girder off of its seat caused this entire building to come down, the interior and then the exterior. Now, there's a problem here with this whole interior then exterior explanation because, first of all, the interior is connected to the building. It's not like they just lowered down an exterior over the skeleton
right.
And it sits there like an apple under a hat or something. So if this interior was falling apart, you would see signs of this on the outside. You would see massive deformations taking place. Of course, that does not happen because this is NIST explanation does not happen. Now, getting back to the University of Alaska study, you know, to take out the interior columns and then the exterior columns within seconds of each other, the only way that is possible is with pre-placed explosives. Now, the UAF study doesn't get into conclusions like that. It just says this was the only way the building could have come down the way that it is if this process happened inside the building. But use your common sense. How is this possible unless you have explosives taking these columns out? All right, fire is an organic process, all right? It's a very chaotic process. It's not going to take out every single column all at the same time. The only way you can have that happen is with controlled demolition. This is the reason demolition experts have to study for a long time in order to practice their trade, because it takes a lot of precision and planning in order to have this happen. So we have a problem there.
The other thing I wanted to bring up is the speed with which this building came down. It came down completely within 7 seconds, I believe, is the number, at free fall speed, which indicates there was absolutely no resistance to this entire thing collapsing. It collapsed at the same speed of dropping a bowling ball off the top of this building, at least for the first 100 feet. And if anybody wants to kind of understand the visual, if you haven't looked at it yet, this is the we see a lot of Las Vegas casinos, the old casinos taken down, and you see these pictures where they just bring them down, boom, 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 and these things just go straight down into their own footprint of the building. That's what this thing looks like, and the speed with which it collapsed. It didn't tip over. It didn't twist. It didn't turn. It didn't chunks of it didn't fall off. The entire thing just collapses straight down in 7 seconds.
Now, that's right. It falls at free fall acceleration for 8 stories. That's about 105 feet of this building's fall. Again, that is another indicator of explosives being used because that means it's meeting no resistance for that entire time. How is that possible in a progressive collapse? Interesting enough, NIST did not acknowledge the free fall of this building at first. They had to be embarrassed by a researcher at their technical briefing who asked about it, had run the physics software on the video of the building, and had discovered, you know, this free fall acceleration of the building. asked them about it. They kind of stuttered and stumbled through their answer. They ended up including the free fall in a revised report, but they did not acknowledge its significance. So it's there in the report, but they don't go any deeper. They don't want to go any deeper. They just include it in a three-step process and kind of cover for it as if it's all part of their official explanation. But it's not. You can't account for the free fall acceleration of this building unless you have explosives inside. I mean, so you have that. You have people on the street reporting shockwaves ripping throughout the building on that morning. You have foreknowledge. You have the BBC reporting the collapse of World Trade Center 7 20 minutes before the building actually came down. You can actually see the woman, Jane Stanley, there on the screen reporting that the Solomon Brothers building, that was World Trade Center 7's name, had collapsed. And the building is still standing there behind her. And then before it actually does collapse, the guy at the home studio loses the feed, because maybe that would be a little bit embarrassing to have the building actually come down behind her after she had reported that it had already collapsed. CNN actually reported the collapse of World Trade Center 7 prematurely as well earlier in the day. So we have, you know, we have things like that that exist that are unexplainable. Again, this was an unprecedented event. No steel frame high rise had ever collapsed because of fire before. So how are they able to predict this is going to happen?
Right.
And we also have explosions being reported throughout the morning of September 11th. We were talking about this before we went on the air today, and people say there were no explosions. Actually, there were documented in the oral histories of the first responders by the city of New York. And there was a researcher, Professor Graham McQueen, up in Canada, went through these oral histories, and he was very conservative in how he did this. He looked for specific accounts that said words like explosion, where there can be no doubt what the person is describing. He didn't use accounts that said, I heard a loud thud or I heard a loud boom. He looked for words like explosion and other words where there could be no doubt what they were describing there, and found at least 118 accounts from the first responders that day, explosions going off. I mean, you go into the lobby of the Twin Towers, it looks like a bomb went off. It's you can see that on video. It's also described. So we have explosions going off that morning, which, again, NIST doesn't really want to take into account.
Right.
And this whitewashed report that they offer.
And this is also on video. I mean, there are reports from the day that you can still find out there. And in some of your documentaries, you can see these things where people are, I know there's one where the couple of firefighters are on the phone near World Trade Center 7, and you just hear this kaboom, and the, you know, the firefighters kind of flinch because it's a huge explosion with the building still standing. So we got to take a break, but let's come back and talk about any evidence that you've seen about the presence of something that would indicate there was explosive material there, and how NIST has responded to that as well. We're talking to Andy Steele. He's the he is the operations manager at Architects and Engineers from 9/11 Truth. We'll finish up with this when we come right back. Stick around. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. We are talking to Andy Steele, the operations manager at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and we've been talking about World Trade Center 7. We wanted to get into the idea that there were explosives in the buildings. This is not included at all in the official story, but there's a lot of suspicion of that, and for Architects and Engineers, plenty of proof as well. So, Andy, tell us a little bit about the Twin Towers and the idea of explosions in the buildings.
Right. Well, we've already established World Trade Center 7. We call this the smoking gun because it is so obvious when you watch this building come down what happened. But a lot of people think they know what happened with the Twin Towers. They watched the airplanes crash into the buildings, and they were given an explanation, and a lot of people haven't thought twice about it. However, there's major problems with the Twin Towers, too. Let's begin with the airplane impacts. As the airplanes crashed into the buildings, we see massive fireballs ejecting from the sides of the buildings. And a lot of what NIST official story relies on is these jet fuel fires. Now, a lot of the jet fuel, you know, keep in mind these jet fuel tanks are a small part of the airplane, and the airplanes were small compared to the Twin Towers, so that's the amount of jet fuel that you have available, and a lot of that jet fuel was burned off in those massive fireballs that we saw shoot outside of the building. Now, according to NEST, these airplanes crashed into the buildings, knocked the fireproofing off of the internal structure that's supposed to protect the structure from the effects of the heat of this these fires. And the trusses sagged as a result of that, pulled the exterior inwards, and then when the top blocks of the Twin Towers, the parts above the airplane impacts, went, they crushed the building in a pile driver action all the way down to the bottom, while somehow destroying itself in the process, because we never see a top block sitting on top of the pile in all of those images of Ground Zero. It didn't exist anymore by the time it got to the bottom. Well, there's some problems with this. The first part of that is that, first of all, NIST acknowledges in their own report that it is impossible for their explanation to be viable without that fireproofing being knocked off of the trusses and such. It actually says, from the limited number of recovered structural elements, no conclusive evidence was found to indicate that pre-collapse fires were severe enough to have a significant effect on the microstructure that would have resulted in the weakening of the steel structure. They also say the towers would not have collapsed under the combined effects of aircraft impact and subsequent multi-floor fires encountered on 9/11 if the insulation had not been widely dislodged or had been only minimally dislodged by the aircraft impact. Now, in the case of the North Tower, they say the collapse begins on the 98th floor. They have to say that because that would be what they would observe in the videos. But there was very little damage to that 98th floor from the airplane impacts. Only the tip of the wing touched that floor. So it could not have knocked the fireproofing off that they require in order for these trusses to start bowing and pulling the exterior in. So that, again, is an official story killer right there. It justifies rerunning the entire analysis, starting over from scratch. Of course, they're not going to do that, so we're going to go further. So they claimed this top block acted as a pile driver, drove the entire building to the ground. Well, there was a mechanical engineer named Tony Zambodi, along with Dr. Graham McQueen, ran an analysis of of one of the tower's collapses, and as they measured it using the physics software, they saw that there was no deceleration of this top block as it hit the lower portion. So what that means is, you know, think about hitting a nail through a board with a hammer. When you hit the nail with the hammer, it doesn't matter what kind of force you're driving it down with, it's still going to slow down as it hits the nail because it's meeting resistance. There's going to be deceleration. In the case of the Twin Towers, there is no deceleration as these top blocks hit the lower part. That is only possible if this bottom structure is being removed at the same time. As well, these top blocks disappear within the first 4 seconds of the fall. So there's nothing left there to drive the building all the way to the ground. What should have happened is that the buildings could have crushed down a little ways and then should have either fallen over or stopped. That's what we would observe in most situations like that in our physical universe. But in this case, the buildings are turning into powder in midair. Also think about this. For concrete to pulverize in midair the way that we observed on September 11th, you need a hard collision of materials to happen. A lot of energy there colliding as they come down in order to have that kind of impact and effect to create that powder that we see billowing all throughout lower Manhattan on that day. However, NIST admits that the Twin Towers fell essentially at free fall, just like World Trade Center 7. So free fall, again, says that there's no resistance coming down. So we have a contradiction there. We have hard collision of building materials, pulverizing concrete in the air, but falling at free fall. Again, only possible with the explanation of pre-placed explosives. We have explosive charges going off far below the collapse line. They're called squibs. If you watch the video, you go to YouTube, type in WTC squibs, you can see the action is happening above. The building is quote-unquote collapsing far high in the air, And far below, we see mistimed explosions going off. Building materials inside these explosions. These are not just puffs of air taking place because of a piston effect, as the other side likes to claim, but actual explosions going off. In the case of the North Tower, the building that had the antenna on the top, the antenna falls first, indicating that the core columns are being removed before the top block begins to go. In the case of the South Tower, we can see the top block begin to pivot. It begins to turn over. Should have followed its momentum all the way to the side had the top block fallen to the plaza below. But then it corrects itself because the core columns are being removed simultaneously. So it's able to have an effect on this top block and change its trajectory and fall into the building. So there's major problems with the official story here on the Twin Towers, and it just doesn't hold up to basic scientific scrutiny. The physics doesn't match with what we are used to here in the physical world.
Right.
And of course, as you study this, you wonder, okay, what actually brought this building down? Is there any evidence of pre-placed explosives other than the physics of the matter? Well, there was a team of scientists led by Dr. Niels Harrit out of Copenhagen, Denmark. They analyzed the dust. And one of the first things you can observe, and this is not just this team that found this, but every group that studied the dust found this, and were these little iron microspheres. And they were so prevalent in the World Trade Center dust that actually they were used to distinguish World Trade Center dust from what's called background dust. That's dust that had nothing to do with the Twin Towers. And the other groups had used these microspheres to make this make this distinction as well. And so Niels Harrit and his team are wondering why they are here. And when they analyzed the dust, they find these little red-gray chips there. So they ran some tests on them. They found that it include iron oxide and aluminum, which is the same elements that make up a material called thermite. They ran ignition tests on these red-gray chips. Because when this was discovered, we had many people who oppose what we're doing say, oh, that's just primer paint, from the structure. Well, they ran ignition tests on them, which means they basically just lit them up. And a primer paint chip, you can see this in a YouTube video that at least at one point was available on the net before all the censorship started happening. And the primer paint, when ignited, turns black and wilts. But these red-gray chips actually light up. They have a thermitic reaction, and they form these iron microspheres that were found throughout the dust. Now, a couple of years ago, many years ago actually, National Geographic tried to do a special debunking this. They put some hefty bags full of thermite on a beam, lit it up, and of course it didn't do anything. And they said, oh, this completely debunks the entire thermite theory. Well, there was a problem with this experiment, one that you have to have something to conduct the thermite, and indeed there are patents for structural steel cutter charges that exist, were patented before September 11th, and it utilizes thermite through a narrow channel. And there's actually a researcher, an engineer named Jonathan Cole, who was able to make what he called a thermitic box cutter with just materials that he was able to obtain as a regular citizen. He was actually able to cut a steel beam in his backyard doing this. So yeah, thermite is used in demolitions. It has been for years, and this is not your typical thermite. This is what has been dubbed nanothermite, a very special military grade thermite that was found.
Right.
When one of these red-gray chips was put in a paint solvent too, just to debunk the primer paint theory further, it was put in this paint solvent for 55 hours and did not dissolve at all, stayed in a hardened state. So this is not paint. This is direct evidence of the chemical signature of what was used to bring these towers down. Now, we go to NIST after their paper is published documenting this. We say, wait, can you test your World Trade Center dust samples for explosives or incendiaries? And they refuse to. Their logic is, well, we don't expect to find anything, so we're not going to do it.
Right. And that's prevalent in your documentaries. Andy, we got to take a quick break. I want to come back and finish up with you in just a second. We're talking to Andy Steele, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Stay with us one more segment when we come back. last couple of minutes of the show. We could talk about this for hours. We're talking to Andy Steele, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Andy, just tell us where people can reach you, where they can find information from you, and you've got a new book out, correct?
I do. Yeah, so we've only given you a taste of the information on this, and we haven't even gotten into the molten metal, but you can go to ae911truth.org. We've got a great write-up on all of this information, and I ask your audience to dive into this, look into this issue with a without any preconceived notions about what happened, and compare the evidence, and you will see for yourself. So that's ae911truth.org, and if you subscribe to our emails, we'll keep you informed on all of our activities. It is a soap opera of what's going on. We're suing NIST right now. Great story there as we go up against the system, so please consider subscribing to our emails. And, you know, as we're always trying to reach out in new creative ways, we've got tons of documentaries, including The Unspeakable, which came out last year, focused on the families. We also have our graphic novel that I wrote for the organization. I did the art for it as well. It's called Born on 9/11. Almost 400 pages worth of illustrations and pictures, and it's a fictional story about a term that it was introduced to me in the last few weeks is called faction. We incorporate all of the evidence that we're talking about today into the story. It's the story of an 18-year-old kid whose father died in the World Trade Center. He was a firefighter, died in the North Tower on that day. The kid wakes up to September 11th, some of the facts that we're talking about today, around his 18th birthday, and he decides to speak out.
Yeah, real quick, Andy, we're running up against the time. Where can they find the book? Real quick, we got 10 seconds.
You can go to ae911truth.org, go to our store, and you can purchase it there. All the proceeds go to ae911truth to help us with our important mission.
Great. Thanks so much, Andy. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.